I'm Rick Sanchez. I've been doing news for 30 years in two languages around the world. Here in the United States, I've interviewed four presidents, co-founded a billion-dollar business. I believe news should be honest and direct, real, impactful. And this, by golly, is Direct Impact. China is the most populated country in the world with the fastest growing economy. In fact, for several decades now, all the economic news coming out of China has been nothing short of remarkable. But something happened recently that revealed what may be China's Achilles heel. The country's birth rate is dropping, and the media seems to be having a field day with it. Watch.
Today, China announced its first population decline in six decades. China's National Bureau of Statistics said the country had 850,000 fewer people at the end of last year than in 2021, bringing its total population to 1.4 billion.
So what are the numbers? Well, I'm going to try and frame the story for you this way. Stay with me here. According to the country's Bureau of Statistics, more people died last year in China than the number of people who were born. More people died than were born. In other words, the fertility rate, it's upside down. Here it is. There were about 10.5 million people who died in China last year, but there were only 9.5 million people who were born, give or take. The UN says this should really not have caught anybody by surprise. They say China's birth rate has been declining now for several years, which caused an aging population and a shortage of workers. And here's why this is important. For most economies to thrive, a country needs to have the right balance of young and middle-aged and old or elderly populations. The young supply the workforce, the middle-aged pay into the pension of retirees, and the retirees, well, they are retired, which means they live off of what they saved and some government assistance that's in that pool for retirees. But when the number of elderly grow too much and the number of young and middle class goes down, the formula becomes lopsided, right? Too many elderly, not enough workers can cause an economy to stagnate. By the way, this type of thing is actually happening in many, if not most, developed countries. It's not just about China. Why? Because, interestingly enough, and this seems almost paradoxical but true, as citizens in any country become more affluent, when they have more money, they make fewer babies. True. The U.S., Russia, the U.K., Spain, France all have declining fertility rates. In fact, in the U.S., if not for immigration, the fertility rate would also be way upside down, if not for immigration. But China's situation is unique. Not only do they have a very low fertility rate, as previously explained, relatively low immigration levels as well, but they also have... You know what they have? They have one unique reason that they find themselves in the position that they're now in. It's called the one-child policy. The one-child policy, a population planning initiative that China implemented back in 1980 to 2015 to curb the country's population growth by restricting families to a single child. Two things happened as a result. It led to a population with fewer workers, fewer people were born. And it also created a population where there are more boys than there were girls, by a lot. And guess what happens without girls? Fewer babies. So what's the Chinese government doing now? Obviously, they've recognized this. They have to deal with it. Officials are now looking for ways to boost the nation's birth rate and are even urging authorities to ramp up the introduction of some policies so that they can promote fertility.
And joining us now to talk about this is Professor Kenneth Hammond. He's a historian and really a specialist in the area of Asia in particular, but China is an area that he very much understands. So he's the perfect person to be talking about this. And here's what I want to start with. And you know why, Professor, I'm going to ask you this question? Because as I was preparing to do this interview with you and I started reading up, And I started going to all the different journalistic outlets and all the different sites, all the different news sites. Everybody in the news media, less certainly the Western media, paints this very anti-China. Like, they make it out to be like, this is the end of a civilization. Give them 2 months and it's going to be over. Of course, I'm exaggerating, but so do they. So how much is Western media overplaying this, as they often do with anything having to do with China?
China is in a situation where it could basically do nothing right. For many, many years, while China had its one-child policies in place, they were soundly criticized for that. A few years ago, when they dropped the one-child policies, then they got criticized for that. And now these reports are coming out that, oh my gosh, for the first time, the population actually declined. It's like the apocalypse. It's the end of the world. What are they going to do? Yeah. India's going to overtake them. It's almost like they're just sort of trying to write off China, be like, well, we thought they were a problem, but I guess they're just going to fade away.
And yet there is some real import to this story. I mean, we hadn't seen anything like this come out of China in some time. So I guess the question is, what is the cause of this sudden announcement or population decline?
Well, of course, they do census reviews every year, and they release their population figures on a pretty routine basis. What's remarkable here is that there had been projections that because of the effects of the one-child policy, but even more so because of what in the West demographers call the demographic transition, which is a pattern that we see all over Western history, where when countries reach a certain level of economic prosperity, the traditional beliefs and behaviors around families will shift. You know, the old values that said you have to have as many kids as possible because some of them are going to die and others aren't going to amount to much, you know, and so if you want to be able to be secure in your old age, you need to have as many children
well,
as possible.
Well, listen, I think you're probably going to agree with this. You're certainly a lot smarter than I am on this. We used to have children because we needed workers. And our children were the ones who worked on our farm or worked in our whatever it is businesses we had. Today we have children so they can go on and do their own thing. So we don't need 4 or 5 or 6 of them, right?
Exactly. And that's what's happening in China, is that young people are busy going about their lives. They want to have careers. They want to have education. They also want to have fun. They want to travel. They want to do things. And there's been a real change in attitudes among young people about, you know, how soon they should get married, if they should get married at all. China has just legalized having children outside of wedlock, as they say, also in an effort to perhaps bolster new births. But the reality is that this has been projected for a while. The surprise in the report this year was that it has actually already begun.
Yeah.
There was talk about how, you know, by 2030 or 2050, the population would peak. It has peaked. And this is going to be an ongoing trend of a declining population. The question, I think, really is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Yeah. Well, I'll shoot that back at you, Professor. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Sure. Well, even in China, there are many people speaking out and expressing great concern about this. The idea is that, demographers like to use this graphic representation of a kind of pyramid or cone, where as the population ages, its numbers get smaller and smaller.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't look like that in China anymore. Now you have relatively small numbers at the very top, a bulge in the middle, but then a narrowing base. And a lot of economists will say, exactly as you were mentioning, you know, oh my God, there's not going to be enough workers. Mm-hmm. There's not going to be enough workers to support this aging population. The number of people over the retirement age in China grows every year. And it's going to be disproportionate in sort of classical economic terms. So there are a lot of people, even in China, who are expressing concern about
this. Yeah, and I think the way I was capturing that earlier as I was discussing this is the very young are the worker bees. The middle class are the ones who feed into the pensioners so that the pensioners can retire. And the pensioners, after working all of their lives and paying into the system themselves, are now waiting for the government to help kind of take care of them, as most of us agree they kind of deserve to be taken care of. The problem is when one of those is imbalanced and you get too many on one end and not enough on the other end, you get economic disharmony. And I guess, by the way, this is not a China problem. This is a Great Britain problem. This is an American problem. This is a France problem. This is happening in almost every developed country. It's just that in China, being the biggest economy and the fact that, you know, they've got a history that you're about to tell us about with the one-child policy, et cetera, it might be a little tougher go for them.
In classical economic terms, I think that there's a case that could be made for that argument.
Okay.
But if you look right next door to China and you look at Japan, Japan has had a stable and slightly declining population for 30 years now. And that hasn't led to economic collapse. If anything, what it has led to is a situation where Japan, the Japanese economy, functions more and more and more efficiently. They're able to do more or maintain standards, even with fewer people coming into the workforce at the bottom level.
How do they do that? How are they defying what we think is an economic template?
Well, I think they're defying it because they have different expectations. They have a culture that's different from that of the West, even though Japan, you know, went through this great dramatic transformation in the late 19th and 20th centuries to reconfigure itself to be a modern capitalist economy and developed its economy and all that. Their culture is still strongly shaped by Confucian values, by the traditions of East Asian culture that are much more sort of communalistic, much more collectivistic. And in China, of course, that's reinforced by the structures of a socialist state. The socialist state is capable of pursuing policies that will address these issues, especially issues of wealth distribution, in ways that in a capitalist economy, it's much more difficult to do. And I'll give you an example of that, which is, you know, the problem as it's formulated here is exactly as you articulated it, that a shrinking number of contributors to pension funds and things like that will lead to problems in supporting a retirement population, non-working, non-productive population.
Yeah, we call it Social Security. They call it something else everywhere else, but it's essentially the same thing, right?
Yeah, exactly. But in China, because it has this socialist core in its economy and in its governance, they're able to put in place policies that are much more effective in terms of that sort of redistributive function. Plus, they're able to guide, and this is what's happened in Japan as well. They have been able to, and they are certainly pursuing this quite aggressively. They're able to direct investment resources towards enhancing labor productivity, enhancing reducing the amount of labor input necessary for an expanding product output, which means that fewer workers working less time to produce more goods means that you don't need that constantly expanding base of labor. And in a socialist economy, you don't want to generate what they call, in capitalist economies, what they sometimes call the reserve army of labor, unemployed people whose presence in the economy puts downward pressure on wages. In a socialist economy in China, they can move away from that, and hopefully we'll be able to continue doing that in the future in ways that are much more difficult for Western economies.
I'm gonna stop you there for a moment, because when we come back, I want to tackle two issues. One of them is obviously the effect that this could have on the global economy, because everybody seems to be wondering about that. And it's the conversations you're going to hear on the CNBCs of the world, et cetera, et cetera. And I also want to know a little bit about the follow-up to the immigration-emigration story that is happening in China. So we'll talk about that when we come back with Professor Kenneth Hammond of New Mexico State University.
Hey, by the way, I have a podcast where I, as a journalist, as a Latino, as an entrepreneur, tell my story and share with you what I've learned about how to succeed, how to grow. It's called The Rick Sanchez Podcast, and I invite you to check it out. I'll see you there. When we come back, though, let's talk about what happens to China's position globally as a result of this fertility situation. Stay with us.
Can there ever be a lasting peace in Ukraine and Europe as long as Kiev's backers only want continued conflict? The West has the wrong priorities. It is looking to inflict a strategic defeat on Russia. Instead, peace will return when security is guaranteed for all.
Волинь — это особая территория на Украине. Территория, все время находящаяся так или иначе под контролем противоборствующих сил. К 1939 году поляки составляли примерно 15-20% населения Волыни.
Когда был атак на Союз Советский, в том же атаку również брали уже два батальона украинских националистов.
Морды массовые, подчас которых нищено цели все волынские, распочались в лютом 1943 года.
Они верили в то, что таким образом они движутся к созданию украинского государства, независимого, моноэтничного, такого, какое они хотели видеть.
Українських націоналістів, то є донців опублікував, там же не завагався доконати жодної зброї на своїм противнику, якщо того хоче вимагало добру України. І це є огромна просьба своєї життєвісті нації.
So what happens globally as a result of China's population decline? Well, let's talk about this. Number one, a shrinking population means less consumption of goods and services, which will or could certainly affect other countries who rely on the Chinese consumer. Number two, a smaller labor force would mean it might be harder for China to compete globally. Three, the economic impact could lead to a political fallout and maybe even a weakening of China's influence worldwide.
And we're back now with Professor Kenneth Hammond from New Mexico State University. Okay, this is what everybody essentially gets to when they talk about China. It seems to be one of those alluring topics that everyone refers to, and that is the one-child policy, which was in effect in China for so many years. And a lot of people are saying that, you know, what is happening in China today with this underpopulation problem, as it's being stated, has a lot to do with the one-child policy. You buy that?
Well, you know, I'm kind of used to being a bit of a contrarian voice on some of this stuff. I don't buy that as the cause of what's happening now. You know, the one-child policies were put in place in the early 1980s at a point where China had achieved significant economic development, but much of the benefits of that development had been consumed by a rapidly growing population.
Yeah.
And the leadership made the decision to try to rein in population growth at the same time that they tried to accelerate economic expansion. And the combination of those two effects yielded that long period of, you know, double-digit growth in gross domestic product that we saw in the 90s and the first decade of this century. But that constraint, that restraint on population growth disappeared about 8 years ago now, 7 years ago now, when those policies were rolled back. And what the surprise was to some observers was that there was no baby boom. It wasn't that everyone was chomping at the bit and anxious to be able to go go out and start having lots of kids again.
It's
there has
like,
been a very
the expectation was that people when they were told you can't breed except for one child, eventually when they got rid of the rule, everybody would go out there like rabbits and start breeding. But you're saying they didn't, and the reason they didn't is the same reason we see in all other Western or developed nations. And that is, the wealthier you are, the less apt you are to want to breed, the less apt you are to want to have babies. And that's almost a universal rule around the world. Correct?
Yeah, we've seen that. We've seen that in cultures throughout Western Europe, North America, Japan, as we say, has gone through that. It shouldn't really be a surprise to anybody. But I think the effect has been a little stronger in China than in many places, because they've gone very quickly now into this period where there's actually a decline in population. And in part, as we were saying before the break, you know, that's because you don't have an immigrant population coming into China to bolster the population. Projections are that by the end of this century, China's population will drop back to about 1 billion people. That's a drop of 400 million people over the next, 7 or 8 decades.
But there is one thing we have to address,
yes.
and that is the fact that because of the one-child policy, there are many more men than there are women in China. As a result, there's not enough ovum, for lack of a better term. I'm not quite sure how to say this delicately, but they're actually now, and I just read this report that seems to indicate that the Chinese government is trying to create a sperm bank, if you will, for there to be, enough males and enough ovum. I don't know that they're looking at ways to create more fertility. So
exactly. Yeah, the city of Shanghai has been the pioneer in this. Shanghai is the most populous city in China. It has over 25 million people. But in Shanghai, the effects of this demographic transition have also been very, very dramatic. Shanghai as a city does have an immigration flow. There are people who are drawn to Shanghai by the economic opportunities there. But natural growth in the Shanghai population is negative. It's shrinking. And Shanghai, very soon after the dropping of the one-child policies, began to initiate programs to try to encourage people to get married, to have babies. They increased the levels of state support, of the provision of services. They even provided financial incentives, and it didn't work. It simply didn't work.
Yeah.
And the irony in some ways is that this gender disparity, which is not immense, but there are definitely more young men than there are young ladies, women. That gender disparity has resulted in many ways, not universally, but in many ways, in a valorization of women. And young women now in China has, of course, equal educational opportunity, employment opportunity, things like that. There are problems, there are glitches with all of that. But basically, they're committed to a gender-neutral, gender-balanced economy. And so that means that there are many more young professional women, young business women, young women seeking their careers who don't want to step aside from that and say, no, I'm just going to stay home and have children and raise babies and do that. They want to pursue their lives. They want to pursue the opportunities which the Chinese economy provides for them.
That's interesting. So, wow. Listen to what you just said. As sad as it was that many years ago during the Maoist rule, where people were literally aborting females and even killing female babies because they all wanted to have boys, that policy, as sad as it was, and as much as we've written about it, has now turned conversely into an advantageous situation for females in China. That's crazy.
Yes. Well, it's a demonstration of what's sometimes called the law of unintended consequences.
Yeah, right.
The one-child policies achieved what they set out to achieve in one sense, in the sense that by restraining population growth, even though it certainly certainly continued to grow, but not at that rapid pace that it had in the first 30 years of the PRC, the People's Republic. That allowed the benefits of economic expansion to raise the material livelihoods of hundreds of millions of people. You know, that China's accomplishments with all kinds of things, healthcare, education, housing, you know, eliminating absolute poverty, things like that, would not have been possible without the one-child policies. When they lifted those, many people, most people, I think, expected that there would be a new wave of population growth, but that the expanded economy would be able to absorb that and indeed, in a classical sense, even benefit from that. That hasn't happened. But I think, you know, again, I'm you know, used to being a little bit of a contrarian. I don't think it has to be the disaster that Western observers are, and some many in China too, are anticipating.
It's a fascinating conversation, Professor. Kenneth Hammond, New Mexico State University historian. Thank you, thank you very much, sir, for taking time to share your wisdom with us.
Pleasure to be here. Likewise. Thanks for having me.
Hey, before we go, I want to remind you of our mission. It's simple, really. I want to try and de-silo the world. We've got to stop living in these little boxes that we all seem to want to occupy. Truths do not live in boxes. Truth is everywhere. I'm Rick Sanchez. I'll be looking for you again right here, where I hope to provide you with some direct impact.